Rabbi Baruch Krasner.
Beginning of the Parsha of Emor. So the pasuk says, Emor el hakoyanim b'nei Aaron v'omarta. There's a double expression, say and you shall say. And Rashi picks up on this. Why is there a double expression? We often have daber v'omarta, but it's very unusual to have this instruction to Moshe, Emor you should say, v'omarta, and you should say again. So Rashi quotes the Gemara. What's it coming to teach us? L'hazhir g'doylim al hakatanim. That this Parsha of the Koyanim, and nefesh lo yitama b'yamov, that they shouldn't become tame, and all the other restrictions, that there is a mitzvah ala gedolim for the adult kohenim to instruct lahazir to be responsible for the katanim, for the younger kohenim. So I'd like to discuss this mitzvah, what exactly this involves, what responsibility is the Torah requiring from the adults, from the gedolim, for the katanim, and also discuss which mitzvahs does it apply to and in which cases. So the beginning of the sugya, the discussion, is the Gemara in Yevamos, which I'd like to learn with you, just these sections of it. The Gemara in Yevamos, daf kuf yud dalet, which they point out is kid, which is an easy way of remembering. This speaks about the responsibilities to children. The Gemara discusses one of the Amar Rami, Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna. The Gemara says, "Irchus Silei Maftachei Debei Medrasha Brishus Harabim." This Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Bisna, he lost the keys, dropped the keys of the Beis HaMedrash in the Rishus Harabim, in the street on Shabbos. And he needed the keys. So he wanted to know. He couldn't carry the keys because he dropped them in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. I assume he dropped them before Shabbos, so they fell off the Shabbos belt. So, yeah, I don't know exactly how they ended up there. So he wanted to get them back. So what did he do? Also, Lekamidra Pados. So he came to Rebbe Pados. Amalei, Rebbe Pados told him, Zil Devar Tali Vitalia. Go and take children. Vilatailu Hasam. Get the children to walk around to play in that area that you dropped the key. And then they will hopefully find the key. They'll think it's a very exciting thing to play with and to keep. They'll bring it towards you. And then when they come into the house, you can take the key from them and then you'll have the key back. So get the children to play there. They'll find it, they'll bring it in. And then you'll be able to get the key from them. So the Gemara says, Alma Kosova. So we see that this Amora Prados holds, Katan Oichon Novelas, Ein Beistin Mitzuvin Lehafrishai. If a Katan is eating Novelas, if he's eating something treif, not kosher, Beistin don't have to step in and separate and prevent the Katan, this child, from doing the Avera. And the Gemara is applying this to all Averas. If you see a child doing an Avera, such as the child carrying the key in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim, Hotzah on Shabbos, you're allowed to stand by. You don't have to step in and prevent him from doing the Avera.
The cause of it in the first place.
Yeah, okay, so we'll speak about the details of what you can and can't do. But at this stage, the Gemara says you don't have to step in to prevent them from doing the Avera. Just to draw your attention to the fact that it's a mitzvah of chinuch, which the Gemara is not discussing now. It's a mitzvah of drabona. We'll speak about that later on, the details of chinuch. The Gemara is not talking about chinuch. The Gemara is just speaking about the deraisa, that you don't have to step in to stop a child doing an Avera. Now, the Gemara asks a number of questions on this, and one of the questions the Gemara asks is from the beginning of this week's Sedra, towards the end of the Amud of Kuf Yudala Domud Aleph. The Gemara says, one second, it says, Emar v'omarta, two expressions, Lahazir Gedolim al Hakatanim, that the Gedolim are responsible for the Katanim. My love, surely it means, Da'omar lehu loyletamud, that you have to step in and tell them, if you see a child, a Kayin, child walking into a Beis HaKvaris, into a place where he's going to become Tommy, surely the Pasuk is telling us that you have to step in and say, get out of the Beis HaKvaris, or don't go in, you're not allowed to make yourself Tommy, you're a Kayin. So surely that would be a proof, you have to step in and prevent a child from doing an Avera. Says the Gemara, no, it doesn't mean that at all. It just means you can't be responsible for making a child kayin tome. So you can't pick him up and put him into the Beis HaKvaris. You can't actively make him tome. But you don't have to prevent him from going in or take him out. So there's a difference between actively making him tamei, which you're not allowed to do, and stopping him from coming in, which is not an adult's responsibility. The child, if he wants to walk in, he can walk in. You don't have to prevent him from going in. So, just at this stage, just to point something out. So, what's the chiddush? What's the Gemara telling us? What's very sort of novel about this mitzvah of not making a katan tamei? You're not allowed to make a kayin, a child. You're not allowed to pick him up and put him into the Beis HaKfaras. Now, we know that there's an issur of lifnei iver lo sitin michshol. You're not allowed to help somebody do an aveira. So the Gemara in Avodah Zarah says, if you have a nazir, you're not allowed to give him a cup of wine to because you're assisting him in doing an aveira. So if somebody is going to eat a trefa piece of meat, you're not allowed to give it to them because, and certainly if they can't get it any other way, because that's lifnei iver lo sitin michshol. You're not allowed to help to assist somebody doing an aveira. So how is this different to lifnei iver? Why does the Torah need to say this? That you're not allowed to pick up the kohen and put him into the Beis HaKfaras? Why is that different from any other time that we know you're not allowed to help somebody do an aveira? What's unique and different about this mitzvah that the Torah has to tell us? So the answer is, and when you think about it, it really sort of brings home how interesting this mitzvah is, that the child who is a kohen is not mitzvah in the mitzvahs. He doesn't have to do the mitzvahs. Now, it might be there's a mitzvah on the parents, maybe a chinuch, maybe midrabanan, but certainly midaraisa, there's no mitzvah for the child to ensure that he doesn't become tamei. So it's very different from a regular case of lifnei iver, where a nozir is not allowed to drink wine, where a regular adult Jewish person wouldn't be allowed to eat treif. Of course, you can't assist him with the issur. That's lifnei iver. But here, the child is not mitzvah. He doesn't have the mitzvah of not becoming tamei. And still, you're not allowed to pick him up and put him into the Beis HaKfaras, even though, when you think about it, he's not really doing much wrong, because he doesn't have to keep that mitzvah anyway. But still, you're not allowed to put him in that situation where he is, if he was an adult, he would be doing an aveira. In fact, the Acharonim learn from here, the Minchas Chinuch learns from here, that a child does have some type of mitzvah. He just doesn't have the intellect to be able to do it properly, so he's not responsible. He doesn't get punished if he doesn't do it. But you see from here that the child does have some type of mitzvah, and that's why you're not allowed to put the kohen who's a child in the Beis HaKfaras, because there is some type of mitzvah that he has. Okay, now, just to give a few more details on this particular mitzvah of not making a child who's a kohen tamei. So the Magen Avraham quotes the Rokeach, he quotes the Shach, who quotes the Rokeach, who says that an eshes kohen, a woman who's married to a kohen, who's a mu'uberes, who is pregnant, so can she walk into the Beis HaKvaras? Because we've just said you're not allowed to take a child who's a kohen into the Beis HaKfaras. So what about a pregnant mother who has a potential kohen inside her? Can she walk into the Beis HaKfaras?
She is not a kohen.
She's not a kohen, but she is an eshes kohen. Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's dafka the zacharim, yeah. So the Rokeach says she's allowed to go into the Beis HaKfaras because there's a svek sveka. That means there's two svekas which are relevant here. First of all, maybe it's a girl. And if it's a girl, then there's no problem of a female bas kohen going to the Beis HaKfaras. And even if it's a zocher, even if it's a boy, maybe it's a nephel, maybe it's not a viable baby. And a non-viable baby doesn't have to keep mitzvahs. So since there's that svek sveka, there's the two svekas, maybe it's a female, and maybe it's, even if his is a male, maybe it's a nephel, it doesn't have to keep mitzvah, so therefore she's allowed to walk into the Beis HaKfaras, and she's not being over on this mitzvah of not actively bringing a baby kohen into the Beis HaKfaras. Pardon? Yeah. Yeah, so as you say, the second suffix is not very likely. Yeah. I don't know. The Simana, there's a whole simon in Svek Svek towards the end of Hilchos Tarova. So it's very, very deep. One of the hardest things to understand is all the details of Svek Svek. Ramosh actually brings us in a tshuva regarding Bein HaShmashas, a baby born just after Shkia, whether that's called a Svek Svek, can you do a bris? You know, which day you do the bris if it's born a minute after Shkia? And he brings this as one of the examples of a Svek Svek, where he talks about the Sofik of Bein HaShmashas and the Sofik of Rabbeinu Tam, and you know, how likely it is and which type of Svekas. So this is one of the sort of classic examples which is used to bring a proof of how you can create a Svek Svek. But you're right, it is quite unlikely. It's interesting you can use it.
What's the look of the most of them by Moshe?
What does he say? It's born minutes after Shkia. He says it's a Svek Svekov, Bein HaShmashas, and so he says you can, but others argue. He's not talking about Shabbos, so he's talking about during the week.
It's not
Tafet. Yeah, I'd have to check, but he does bring this in that connection. Yeah. So Mr. Mankoff's pointing out that here we have to take a stage further. What we said before, we said, it's a proof from here that a child has some connection to a mitzvah, that even though he's not commanded, but you can't take him into the basic forest. And as you're pointing out here, the Uba, well, he's learning Kola Torah Kola. Here you see that there's even some connection to the Uba, and not taking him into the basic forest. Yeah, good point. So Mabin Avraham asked a question. He says, well, one second. There's a whole discussion about people in airplanes, whether they're makabel tuma, and it's actually irrelevant to that. I don't know all the details of the tuma of a tara, but the Magen Avraham asks, there's something called a tuma belua, or others say tara belua, that the child who is inside the mother is not makabel tuma. There's no problem of taking him into the Beis HaKfaras because the tuma doesn't penetrate into the mother's body and wouldn't be matame the child. He brings very technical proofs for that. The Nasif Chai, one of the Mefarshim on the Magen Avraham, brings an interesting proof. He says there is a Mishnah in Parah, which is brought to the beginning of the second Perek of Sukkah, discusses the lengths to which they went to ensure Tara, the purity involved, when they were getting ready for the Parah Aduma. Now, why was that? Because the Tzedukim, the Kofrim at the time of the Mishnah, said that the person who was the Kohen who was burning the ashes for the Parah Aduma had to be completely tar, he had to have gone to the mikveh, and also had a sunset as well. And Chazal argued with that. They said, no, it's enough that he's been to the mikveh, even if he hasn't had a sunset. And therefore, they were matame the kohen, and they took him to the mikveh, and to show that we argued with the tzedukim that you didn't need this har of shemesh, you didn't need sunset. Now, because we were lenient in one area, they went out of their way to ensure there was complete tara in all other aspects of the parah aduma. So when they were drawing the water, they would take special children who, the Mishnah, I'll read to you the Mishnah, very interesting, the beginning of the second parak of Sukkah. It says they would take a woman while she was pregnant with a baby, they would put her in an area which was built on top of arches so that the tumah wouldn't be metame the child when the child was born. It says, Chatzeris bunim b'rishanayim daf chaf aleph of Sukkah, agabi sela. They would have their babies there so the babies wouldn't be tame. Megalis b'neim shem lapara. And then they bring a mavim shvarim, they'd ride them on top of oxen, and they put a door on top of the ox and put the child on top when they were going to draw the water so that the tumah wouldn't get anywhere near the child when he was drawing the water. So they would go to great lengths to make sure that this child was completely tahar. Now, the Nesiv Chaim points out, well, they would bring the women when they were pregnant. So he says, well, maybe they were walking over a cave on the way when they were pregnant to come into this special place. So have you helped anything? So we see from there that the concern was when the child was born, the child would be born in this place, which was built on arches and wouldn't become tummy. But before the child's born, there's no problem of him becoming tummy. Because, you know, they wouldn't take all the precautions from the beginning of the pregnancy. It was only when the child was being born, just, you know, shortly before they take precautions. Yeah, exactly, yeah, yeah. So that's the proof that there's no, when the child's inside the mother, that can't become tummy. So what did the Rokeach mean? So why is the Rokeach saying that? You need a sveka, you need to come onto this logic that maybe it's a female, maybe it's a nephel. So he says, and this is how the Mishnah Berurah brings it down, that the chiddush is that a pregnant wife of a kohen could go into the Beis HaKvaros, even though she might give birth in the Beis HaKvaros. You know, even though she's nine months pregnant, and it might be any day. So what the Rokeach means is she can still walk into the Beis HaKvaros, even though she might give birth, because of this Svek Sveka. That makes it more interesting, because then there's maybe another Sophic. Maybe she won't give birth. But that's how the Mishnah Berurah brings it down. The Shmur in Shin Mem Gimel, when he brings all the halachas of children at the end of Hilchos Shabbos, so he says, he says, Lachnisa, Eishes Kayanim, Oberesh, Korav, Yomel, Aledes, Morteres, Ikonis, Lachatela, Asher Nirulon, Shavadai, Tayyah, even though it seems certain she's going to give birth, Shemo Yezacha, and it's a Svek Sveka. So even though it seems she's going to give birth, it's still a Svek Sveka, she is allowed to go into the Beis HaKvaros. Okay, now, we mentioned before there's also a mitzvah of chinuch. So this is the mitzvah midaraisa, not making a child who's a kohen tummy, not actively making him do an issa. But there's also a mitzvah drabanan of chinuch. Now, just to give some very brief guidelines for when this mitzvah applies, it's discussed in Shin Mem Gimel, the end of Hilchos Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch, the Ron, the Shabru also gives details. Now, the Gemara in Sukkah tells us that there's a mitzvah drabanan for a father to educate his child on how to do mitzvahs. Now, Achronim say, where does this come from? Well, there's a mitzvah midaraisa for a father to teach his son Torah, v'shinan tamal vonecha. Now, that's the only mitzvah min haTorah for a father to teach the child. Then Chazal came along, and they made a mitzvah drabanan of chinuch, that the father has a mitzvah to educate his child to do all other mitzvahs as well, and apart from teaching him Torah. Now, the Gemara says, when does this mitzvah apply? Whenever the child is able to do the mitzvah. So the Gemara in Sukkah says, when he's able to shake a lulav, his father should give him a lulav, help him to shake a lulav. When he can talk, then he should teach him Shema. When he knows how to put on clothes, he should buy him tzitzis and help him put on tzitzis. So the father has a mitzvah midrabanan. Whenever the child is able to do the mitzvah, it's called Bar Havana. He's old enough, mature enough to do the sort of action involved with the mitzvah. So then the father is obligated at that point to provide the child with the education and with the means to do the mitzvah. Now, that's with mitzvahs asay. Now, what about the responsibility of the father to stop the child doing aveiras? So it doesn't say in the Gemara. Some Rishonim say, the Rashba says, there's no mitzvah for the father to stop the child from doing Averis. Why is that? What's the logic behind that? Now, often we say Averis are more, mitzvah loisase is more serious than a mitzvah sase. There's more serious punishments, Einshim connected with them. So the idea is that a mitzvah sort of requires training. To do a mitzvah sase, so you have to teach the child how to shake the lulav, how to put on tefillin, how to put on tzitzis. It's something that requires teaching. Whereas not to do an Aveira is more straightforward. You tell him, okay, you can't do that, and that's it. There's no training involved in not doing something. So the Rashba says that there's no mitzvah drabanan of stopping the child doing an Aveira. However, we don't paskin like that. And we paskin that once a child is old enough to understand the concept of discipline, of not doing something, the father is responsible to teach him not to do averas. Now, it's difficult to give precise ages, but they say that that comes before the level of understanding doing a positive mitzvah. So the age of doing a mitzvah, maybe around 6 or something like that, you know, when the child can understand how to shake a lulav, how to put on what tzitzit is earlier. But you know, certainly some mitzvahs may only start at the age of 6, whereas teaching a child not to do things, they say, starts from around about the age of 3, when a child can understand yes and no. In other words, that some things you can't do, and some things you can do, some things you can't do. Now, who is responsible for the mitzvah of chinuch? So, certainly the father is. Whether the mother's responsible is a machlokes, two different opinions. He brought down in the Mishnah Berurah, he says, you know, some say the mother has a responsibility, some say she doesn't. Do other people have a responsibility for somebody else's child? Again, this is a machlokes. The way we paskin is, the Mishnah Berurah paskins, that for mitzvah, for an avera, which is deraisa, then other people have a responsibility for other people's children. However, the Mishnah Berurah says that's only at a slightly older age than the age of, let's say, 3, when they understand yes or no. It's when they reach the age of doing mitzvahs, then you have a responsibility for other people's children as well, when it's a mitzvah deraisa. So, as I said, the details of chinuch are quite complex. The Mishnah Berurah discusses it in Shin Mem Gimel, and often there's sort of machlokes in various details. So the Gemara in Yevamos tells us that there are 3 places in the Torah where we are told that an adult is not allowed to make the child do the avera. So one is with the Tumas Kainam, as you said, Emor V'Amarta. And also in Parasha Shemini, where it speaks about not eating shirotzim, about not eating sort of, the non-kosher creepy crawlies, and dam, also where it says that you're not allowed to drink blood. So the Gemara learns from an extra pasuk. The pasuk says lo sochlum, do not eat them, and the Gemara learns lo sa'achilum, don't feed them. There's a mitzvah not to feed a child with non-kosher food, the trefa food. And again, just to bring home, you know, what's the chiddush here? Even though the child himself is, let's say, 2 years old, doesn't have any concept of what he can do, what he can't do, so the child himself would be allowed to eat it, and we wouldn't have to stop him from eating the non-kosher food. Nonetheless, we are not allowed ourselves to feed it to him. Now, how far does this go? So we said if he does it himself, we don't have to stop him, but we can't feed him the non-kosher food. So what about putting something not kosher in his hand? So you're not actually putting it into his mouth, but you're putting it into his hand, and he might then put it in his own mouth. So do you say, well, you've facilitated the issur by putting it in his hand, that's like taking him into the Beis HaKvaros, that's like feeding him? Or do you say, no, you haven't fed it to him, you've maybe enabled him to do it, but you haven't actually put it in his mouth, and that's called the child doing it himself, and there's nothing wrong with putting it in his hand. So how do we view putting something, treif, not kosher, in his hand, and he then goes and feeds himself? Yeah, it might be a situation, but on the other hand, if he does it himself, you don't have to stop him. So maybe the Torah only usses actually feeding him. And it's a chiddush that the Torah says you can't feed him. How far do we take this? Is it only completely direct where you're putting it in his mouth, or is it even if it's one step stage removed? Exactly, yeah, that's relevant. We'll discuss it later with the keys. He put the children there, so he didn't do it, and there was nothing wrong with that. So maybe putting it in his hand, there's nothing wrong with doing that. So the Magen Avraham in Shin Mem Gimel brings a Gemara in Shabbos, and he learns from there that you're not allowed to put something treif in a child's hand. A very interesting Gemara, which I'd like to read to you. The Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Tzadi, speaks about what you can and can't carry on Shabbos. Now, there are certain shiurim that the prokim in so the 7th, 8th, and 9th parak of Shabbos discuss. What size object are you not allowed to carry on Shabbos? Now, there's a principle, chatzi shiur osam in Atari. You can't carry even a small object, providing it has some, you know, basic significance. But in order to have a chiyuv chatas, the classic issa has a particular size that you can't carry that thing on Shabbos. And the Gemara gives different sizes for different objects, and it really depends on the smallest practical use of that object. So, for instance, the eighth parak begins hamotzi yayin. What's the amount of wine you can't carry on Shabbos, or if you carry the chatas? Kadima zigas kos. The amount of wine that it takes to mix a small sort of basic cup of wine. The amount of honey is the amount you need to put on a wound. Oil to rub into a baby. So everything has its own size. Now the Gemara says at the end of the ninth perek, Amar Akiva, the Gemara says, what's the size of a chogov, of a sort of a type of locust? It was mentioned at the end of the Shmini, one of the different locusts. So the Gemara says, chogov chai tahar, if it's a live locust, tahar, and it's kosher, in the times where they knew exactly what the type of kosher locust was, so kol shehu, then even the smallest locust, even a baby locust, is you're chayiv for carrying it on Shabbos. Why? Because it has a use. What's the use? You could give it to a child to play with. And nowadays it sounds a bit, not the type of toy that they'd sell in the toy shop. But in the times of Chazal, that was a toy that they would use. Seemingly, it was quite common. And therefore, because it has this use, you're chayiv, even for the smallest amount, because it has a use, to give it to your kids to play with. Mace, when the locust dies, kegregeres, then the size that you're chayiv for is the amount of a gregeres, which is a fig. The reason for that is it then becomes food. It's something edible. It doesn't need shechita. Tosafot speaks about that. You don't need to shecht it. When it's dead, you can eat it. And therefore, it's like all other foods, which is the size of a gregeres. Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbi Yehuda argues, he says, even if it's tummy, even if it's a not kosher locust, kol shehu, then that's also the smallest amount, because you also give it to a child to play with. So the Tanakhama says, you don't give a not kosher locust to a child to play with. Rabbi Yehuda says that you do. So the Gemara says, what's the machloka say? Well, why did the Tanna come and say that you don't give a tomei chagov, a not kosher locust, to a child to play with? So the Gemara says, because dilma mayis v'achillei. Because we're worried that if you give a tomei, a not kosher locust, to a child to play with, it might die, and the child might eat it. And Rabbi Yehuda says, no, Rabbi Yehuda says, if it dies, katzah mispitzah, the child will be too upset over his lost locust, he won't eat it. The Tanakhama says, we're worried that if you give him a not kosher locust, he might eat it, and therefore, you can't give it to him. Rashi says, why can't you give it to him? Because even if you say katzan ochan avedas a based in mitzvah afrishay ma'ida delay avina lebiyodayim, you can't give it into his hands. So the Tanakham says you can't give a not kosher locust to a child to play with, because that's like feeding it to him. So the Morgan Avraham brings a proof from here that you can't give a child a non-kosher or something issa into his hand, because that's as if you're feeding it to him. So the Aruch HaShabbos asks the question, he says, how likely is it that it's going to die? Is that really called feeding? You go to give it to him, and it might die, and he might eat it. Is that really called feeding? He says, seemingly that was a common occurrence. You give him the locust, it would serve its purpose for a few minutes, it would die, and then there was that concern he might eat it. So we see in the Gemara that you're not allowed to put it into his hand. That is the equivalent of feeding it to him. So there's an interesting question on this. Master Hashakal asks on the Magen Avraham, he says, we see elsewhere in Simon Shin Mem. So the Ramah speaks about cake with letters written on the cake. Now, so the source of this is the Mordechai in the end of Shabbos. The Mordechai speaks about this cake that they used to make for children to eat. And he speaks about the halachas of giving it to a child. So it says, Nishal Rabbeinu Meir, the Maram Rotzburg was asked, Al Ugos Hatinokus, about this cake for children, Shekosvin Osius, Vatevos. So they write letters on it. Eich Oichman Osim Hatinokus Beyontov. So he says, how can the children eat it on Yom Tov? So he goes through a whole discussion, and he says, yeah, it's true. For an adult, it would be forbidden to eat it. But for a child, ein lachos, there's no problem. To cut on oich on the velus, ein based in mitzvah nafrish. You don't have to prevent the child from eating it. So the adult shouldn't eat the cake with the writing on it. But for the child, it's not a problem for him to eat it, because we don't have to stop the child from doing aveiros. And the Mogen Avraham, how does the child get the cake? Very good. Yeah, excellent question. So the Mishnah Berurah brings down from the Mogen Avraham that you're allowed to give it to him. The Mogen Avraham says you're allowed to give it, put it in his hand. So the Ramah says Shin Mem Sif Gimel. Also the Shaber Uga Shekosav Aleik Menos. You're not allowed to break a cake with writing on your happy birthday cake, but says the Mishnah Berurah Mutalit No Litina. You can give it into the hand of the child, even though he might break it himself. So the question is, 1 second. We said before that you can't put a dead locust in the, if it's not kosher, into the hand of the child because he might eat it. So what's the difference with a cake that you can give it to the child, even though he may end up breaking it or snapping it, maybe even eating it? How come that's different? That's not called feeding him something which is awesome. And truth is, it gets a bit complicated with cakes, because Mishnah Berurah brings down, we're lenient to eat the cake with writing on. We don't cut through a cake with writing. We are makel to eat a cake with writing on. The Mishnah Berurah has a whole chesh before this based on the dog of Merivava, and therefore it's not such a strict isso in the first place. So maybe that would be why. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav says in Shin Mem Gimel that Shabbos is different to other Isurim. When it comes to other Isurim, you're not allowed to put it into the hands of the child if you might do the Issa. But when it comes to Shabbos is different, and you can put it into his hand. So you can put this cake with writing into his hand, even though he might end up breaking it or eating it, even if you think eating is a problem. He doesn't explain why that difference is the case, but that's what the Shulchan Aruch Rav says in Simon Shin Mem Gimel. Could be because Shabbos needs machshava, so maybe we're more lenient with the child. Yeah. Okay, so we mentioned before the Hashem's Nagov drew to our attention. The Gemara says that the Amora, Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna, he took the children when he wanted his key. He dropped his key in the Rishus HaRabim, and he wanted the children to carry it for him. So he put the children to play in that area. The children picked up the key, and they carried it to his house. So the Rashba brings a proof from here that to put a child next to something which is Asa, even though he might end up doing the Issa, that's not a problem. So that's not called feeding him, which is interesting. You know, we've said that you're not allowed to feed him. We've said you're not allowed to put it in his hand. But seemingly putting him next to the Issa is not problematic. And the Rashba's proof is from the Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Bisna, who took the children, put them in that place in the street, and they found the key and carried it on Shabbos. Chasam Sofer says, well, maybe that's not a proof, because it could be the children would carry it together. Maybe two of them would pick it up together. And on Shabbos, we know Shnayim She'asif, if two people do it at the same time, then that's not at least an Issa Daraisa. So, in fact, the Rashba says, maybe we can learn from here. But it seems to me that we do follow this Rashba. And to put a child next to something which is Asa, there are definitely those who are lenient and say that's not called feeding him. And please don't apply anything halacha lemaisa in a practical way from the Shia without consulting with the Rav first. Because these halachas are quite complicated. So where is this relevant? So again, I'm not pasking in any way. It's a complicated question, but now let's say you have a light which is left on and you want it off, or you have a light which is off and you would like it on Shabbos. So if you have a child in the house, so what issues are involved with, you know, getting the child to turn it on or off? So certainly to tell the child to turn the switch on or off, even if it's a very young child, even if it's a 2-year-old child or a 1-year-old child who isn't relevant to chinuch yet, but still you're not allowed to tell him to turn the light on or off. Why? Because the Gemara says that's like feeding him. The Gemara in Yevamah says you're not allowed to tell him you know, put the fire out, bring me the key. Instructing a child to do an Aveira is the same as feeding it to him. So you're not allowed to tell a child to do it. So what can you do? So the question is, can you sort of put a chair next to the light switch and then sort of sit the young child on the chair and hope that he will turn the lights on or off? So again, the issues involved are, if it's a child who's old enough that you have a mitzvah of chinuch, let's say a 3 or 4 year old child who understands Aveiros, then the father certainly wouldn't be able to, because he has the responsibility to teach the child what he can and can't do on Shabbos. Definitely wouldn't be able to put the child near a light switch and hope he turns it on when he should be telling him not to turn it on or off. But if it's a younger child where there's no mitzvah of chinuch, and you're just putting the child next to the light switch, so, and he's not doing it for you, you know, he's just playing with it, he wants to do it for himself, because if he does it for you, that's more of a problem. So then, you know, based on this Gemara of getting the children to play next to the keys, so the Aruch HaShabbos suggests there are those who will be lenient to take the child, a very young child, less than the age of chinuch, and put him near the light switch if he thinks, if he might play with it and turn the light on or off. And then he'd be able to take him away once he's done what you wanted him to do. I know there are similar questions with a fridge where you forgot to turn the lights off before Shabbos. You want to know if you can ask a child to open the fridge again. It's very complicated questions. But generally, the principle is, if he's a younger child who doesn't... just to put the younger child near the problematic thing on Shabbos, you know, there might be leniencies, coolers to do that. Yeah.
They don't realize the lights are on.
Yeah.
Standing there with the kid.
Yeah, so they say if the child doesn't realize what's going to happen, he doesn't know when he opens the door, the light's going to go on, even if it's a child who understands, even if it's an older child who understands Shabbos, but since he doesn't know about it, it would be a misasek, there would be maybe a drabonon, and if he wants something in the fridge for himself, then that makes it better as well. So if you put all of those things together, you know, there's possibly room to be made. Again, please check. Aruch HaShabbos discuss this. If it's a drabonon, because he doesn't know, if it's for himself, so then you could possibly even tell him to take something out of the fridge for himself. Again, look in Aruch HaShabbos, end of Chelik Beis, who discusses this in great detail. Just to conclude, they evolved from the Vilna Gaon and on Chinuch. So the Pasuk in Mishlei, Perek Chaf Peis, Pasuk Vav, says, Chanoich lanar al pidarkoi, gam ki yazkin layosor memena. This is the source for Chinuch. Chanoich lanar al pidarkoi, teach a child according to his way. Gam ki yazkin, when he gets older, layosor memena, he won't stray from the path that you have taught him. So says the Vilna Gaon, what does that mean? Every child, the Gemara Shabbos says, every person is born with a particular muzzle. So perhaps nowadays we'd say with particular characteristics, with strengths, with weaknesses. And the Gemara says, let's say a child born under the star sign of Madim, which we say Mars, so he has sort of a fiery character. He can either be a moil, he could be a butcher, or he could be a listim, you know, somebody who kills. So the Gemara says, what does the Gemara mean? With every characteristic, you could use it for a mitzvah, a mile. You could do something parav with it, say, you know, a tabach, a butcher, or you could do something wrong. You could be a murderer. So says the Vilna Gaon, everything's like that. You can use it for the best. You can use it for parav, something in the middle, or something bad. He says you have to teach a child, find out what the child is good at, chanoch lanar al pi darkei, and channel that strength of the child so that it's al pi darkei, so that it's according to the thing that he naturally has a talent for, and he'll use it for the best. If you try and teach him against his natural inclination, it will work for a bit, but then it won't be long term, and as soon as you stop threatening him, he'll go back to his natural path. So better to teach him what he's naturally good at, use it for the best. If you do that, gam ki yazkin, even when he gets older, lo yosemeno, since you've taught him according to his strengths, apidarkai, gam ki yazkin, lo yosemeno, we should all see that bracha mekuyam, there will be chinuch long term.